The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is 91.3 KUAF, your home for NPR news and NPR programs like Morning Edition and All Things Considered for more than 32 years. And this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, May 16th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead this hour, an effort to reach more underrepresented populations and more first-in-their-family college students to allow them a chance to consider law school. And later, the Dover Quartet discussing a new documentary, why they keep coming back to Northwest Arkansas every Artisphere, and their newfound love of the television show Twin Peaks. First, one major change to how Arkansas handles the rising cost of health care for low-income people is underway. In an effort to cut Medicaid spending from the state budget, a new law allows providers to supervise the care of an estimated 30,000 chronically ill Arkansans. Arkansas Public Media's Sarah Weitz-Kotacek has more on the formation of provider-led care in Arkansas.
Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson told lawmakers he wants to cut the state's Medicaid costs for its sickest residents by over $800 million. So they passed a law to create provider networks to manage the costliest Medicaid patients. Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families health policy expert Marquita Little says that includes the developmentally disabled, elderly, chronically ill, and mentally ill.
We have a small percentage of the population that has a really high level of need that accounts for a great portion of the cost.
Not only are their physical or mental health problems and developmental delays sometimes interconnected, they may make patients poor managers of their own needs. Doug Statter is CEO of the Centers for Youth and Families, which treats kids. He's part of a provider group that's forming. If approved, it will manage caregivers and help patients as a go-between.
Making sure that if they're in a day treatment program, that they're also taking their medications routinely. They're not subject to being going into the emergency room for a psychiatric emergency. They're not going to be a subject to going into an emergency room for physical health care needs.
If their health care is managed and they're better educated about taking medications, perhaps they'll stay out of the emergency room where costs are high. And if their providers are being overseen by a designated group of other caregivers, they might do a better job. CEO of the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement, Joe Thompson, says it's part of a national move away from a fee-for-service model paid directly through the Department of Human Services. He says the old way rewards doctors and providers for volume of visits and tests rather than good strategy and coordination.
To more of a value-based purchasing where the provider actually has some financial risk. They are paid more if the outcomes are good at an efficient, low-cost manner. They owe money back if the outcome is poor or the costs associated with the care are out of alignment with what is the norm.
DHS will pay incentives to the provider groups if they increase efficiency for patients and cut costs for the state. One goal is to move more medically frail Medicaid patients out of nursing homes and into their own homes, where officials believe care will be cheaper for the state. Jodi Ann Tritt is a spokesperson for Arkansas's Hospital Association. Her group is one watching closely to make sure their rates will be adequate and that a functional infrastructure will be in place in the provider network.
So all of the things you worry about when you're thinking about a patient's need, like network adequacy and will physicians and doctors be available, will nurses be available for the patients if they need them, especially in the rural parts of the state, are at the forefront of our minds right now.
DHS has set a June 15 deadline for provider groups to apply for contracts. They must have a statewide network of members with a range of specialties. An emergency clause in the legislation allows the changes to take effect immediately. Sarah Weitz-Kotacek, Arkansas Public Media.
Arkansas Public Media is funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. You can find out more at arkansaspublicmedia.org or at the Arkansas Public Media Facebook page. This is Ozarks at Large. The months between the conventional spring and fall semesters on the University of Arkansas campus are different, but certainly not silent. There are camps, programs, and seminars designed to allow high school students, undergraduate students, and others learn more about everything from riding to science to band to athletics. The Summer Pre-Law Program, or SPARC, invites prospective law students to campus to experience 3 weeks of what a full-time law school life could be like. There is LSAT prep, actual class and tests, and interactions with practicing attorneys. The program also strives to attract students who might be first in their family to attend college or from populations underrepresented in the legal world. Tamla Lewis is Associate Dean for Administration at the University of Arkansas School of Law and is coordinating the SPARC program. She says the three-week course helps people thinking about law school make an informed decision before spending too much time or money.
Because of the expense of the law school admissions test and things like that, you know, once you go through our program, if you even want to take the exam, spend the expense on the test itself. Not to mention, you don't want to start your first year of law school with those expenses in mind and then decide that's not the route that you want to take. It's not like in undergrad when you can change your major.
Right.
Career choice there.
Right. So, and this is not just an afternoon or two. I mean, you make sure there's some immersion going on.
Absolutely. We had a big meeting today to wrap up the schedule itself and finalize the schedule. It's for 3 weeks. It's running May 22nd. Is our orientation day, and it's running through June 9th, which is our graduation and award ceremony day. Residential program, hour by hour, we've planned the schedule out for 3 weeks. A big part of that, though, is our LSAT, the Law School Admissions Test. We offer a prep course. I think it's market value of close to $1,500, $1,600 that the students do get this test as well, or the course as well. So a big part of that is an academic component that Dean Leeds will teach, and then also the law school prep, which is something we really, really want to concentrate on.
So these prospective law school students will have something from the dean.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She will be teaching a two-hour legal issues in higher education course for 2 weeks of the three-week program. 1 week we're just dedicating to guest speakers coming in and talking about different topics associated with the law. One thing we're doing this year is trying to have a theme that will center on higher education institutions. So anytime a speaker is coming in, we're asking if they have had any interactions with the university or any colleges, just to relate that as kind of a theme through our 3 week program.
So there are courses involved in this. I mean, this, when we say it's as representative as a 3 week course can be of law school, you're putting them in classes.
We want them to see how rigorous law school is. At the same time, we are doing things we think will be fun. We're trying to keep the topics animated, lively. We're covering a number of issues. We're talking about criminal law. We're talking about the new guns on campus legislation. We are covering torts, athletics, just a number of legal topics that we think, among all of these different topics, there may be a career path in there for one of our students. We have a number of guest speakers, as I said, coming in. We are doing two law firm visits. I'm taking the students to Kutak Rock and to Bassett Law Firm as well to sit and talk with some of the attorneys about their different practice areas. So we're wanting to immerse the students as much as we can into, you know, a three-week lifespan of a law student.
And these will be young men and women who are upperclassmen achieving a bachelor's degree, right? So if they were to go to law school right out, they'd only be a couple years away.
Initially, the program was aimed at rising juniors and seniors. Because it's no longer part of the PLUS program, which was administered through the Law School Admissions Council, and it's now privately funded by Walmart, we have a bit more flexibility. So we have accepted a very, very diverse group of students. The majority of them are graduating seniors or have recently graduated. We have a few who have been out of school 2 to 3 years but have shown an interest in the law. So for the most part, it is graduating or recently graduated undergraduates. Not so many juniors at this point. We really wanted them as close to graduation and ready to enter the profession as possible.
I know when this developed, part of the idea was to try to get students who might be first in their family to go to college, might be from underrepresented or underserved populations. That's still a main goal?
Absolutely. And what's interesting this year, we have 24 participants. First-generation students, it's split 50-50. 12 have had family members graduated and 12 have not. Very diverse group. About one-third of the group is from Arkansas. We have diverse backgrounds as well. More females this year, 17 females, 7 male students. So we've got a heavier female population this year than before. 8 students are graduating or have recently graduated from the U of A. The rest of the students are all from different institutions, from Berkeley to Boston University. So we actually have them from West Coast to East Coast. Very diverse.
Do you at all consider also, I mean, you're letting these prospective students know about law school. Do you also want to let them know about Northwest Arkansas, just a little bit about where, if they chose this particular school of law, they would be?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I'm working on now, feedback from last year, was that some of the students did not feel a connection to Northwest Arkansas, a connection to the campus. As part of our orientation, we are going to encompass campus tours. So not just the law school, but just the University of Arkansas campus itself. We are taking them on field trips to Crystal Bridges. We've got a Buffalo River float trip planned, possibly visiting Devil's Den. So it's, of course, the legal component of it, but we want them to know and understand how beautiful this community is, how welcoming and inclusive this community is.
Your undergraduate degree is in English,
My undergraduate degree?
Your bachelor's degree.
Bachelor's degree, yes.
And then your master's was in education?
Yes.
Then you went to law school, got the degree there?
Yes.
What led you to a career in law?
Well, that's a good question. I have always loved the legal profession, and I started working after I received my bachelor's degree as a paralegal. And, oh, my goodness, I was a paralegal for about 7 years. So I was a non-traditional student starting law school. A number of my classmates had come straight from undergrad and gone straight into law school. Not all of them, of course, but the vast majority. So after working as a paralegal, I knew that I enjoyed the work. A lot of hours, spent with the attorneys, some entertaining, some not so much. But I knew that I wanted to pursue a degree in the legal field.
I'm assuming you did not have the opportunity for something like Spark? I mean, no, even though the paralegal work kind of was.
I did not. I think that would have been really a catalyst for me to go maybe directly from undergraduate from an undergraduate degree right into law school, if I'd had something like that. I went to University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff, which is an HBCU, and I think that we do have a student here from that institution. So, you know, thinking back on it now, I think that would have certainly been something I could have benefited from.
What do you remember about the first week of law school?
The first week of law school, feeling overwhelmed. With orientation, there's so much that you have to soak up and learn. It can be a bit overwhelming, but at the same time, it was so exciting. I think once you've gotten past that LSAT, your scores are good enough. You've gotten that acceptance letter. You're riding on a high at that point. I think if you fast forward and ask after that first final exam, I might have a different answer for you.
A bit humbling, perhaps.
I will say so. It's definitely an experience that will change your life. If you want to practice law, whether you want to practice law or not, I think a JD is something that would enhance anyone's career. But the first year of law school, I think it's a different experience for everyone. As I mentioned, I was non-traditional. I had a 7-year-old daughter, so I was also homeroom mom, Girl Scout cookie mom, and first-year law student. So,
have you caught up on the sleep from that experience yet?
I did not sleep. I have not slept, actually, in about 15 years.
You know, that's one of the things, we're joking about it, but what I've always thought could be a deterrent to going to law school is we hear so much about how much work and how little sleep, and it doesn't sound necessarily always pleasant.
I would not say that it's always pleasant, but the payoff is certainly worth it. As I said, my experience was different because I went to law school as a single mother. But I have to say, my classmates rallied around me. homeroom mom days, I had classmates that would show up in my stead if I had a final I needed to study for. One thing about law school, especially that first year, the camaraderie, you're all going through the same thing. You're taking the same courses. You're supporting each other. So it's a very competitive environment. But I think if you, in this program, I think would help people to understand, because it is a rigorous three-week program, that this is something you want to do or this is not something that you want to do. We want them to have a real life experience. So that first year, some people say it's a weeding out experience or a make or break experience. But I think that just depends on if that is certainly what you want to do. It's something that can be accomplished.
I bet there's value for your 7-year-old to 10-year-old daughter, I guess, over the course of the, mm-hmm. of the law school career, of seeing a parent advancing a career in education like that. I mean, being aware of it.
I think so. I was with my daughter yesterday. She's now 23 and a graduate of the University of Arkansas. I do want to say that. She is very proud of me. I have to say I'm just as proud of her. She would be in the law school in the study lounges with us. She'd do her homework. I would do my homework. So it's an experience that we share that I think everyone doesn't get to share. But you know, for any single parents out there, speaking of diversity, that, you know, that's also an area, too. It can be done. It can certainly be done.
And the value of having a diverse legal population, I imagine, just can't be described. Having more women, having more people of color, having more people from rural backgrounds.
Absolutely. I think to increase diversity in the profession, that's one thing also that the Law School Admissions Council is really leading the charge on with these programs, the PLUS program that we have now, you know, transitioned over into the SPARK program. It's just increasing diversity in the profession. We want to represent people and issues that are relevant today, represent people that look like you. The profession should look like the community. I think it's just a win-win for the campus, for Northwest Arkansas, to increase the diversity and inclusion. And I think we're doing our part to do that, just for the profession as a whole.
Tamla Lewis is Associate Dean for Administration at the University of Arkansas School of Law and is coordinating this year's summer pre-law program beginning later this month. Tamra Lewis says there are still opportunities for lawyers in the area to participate in judging the oral arguments at the program. You can learn more at law.uark.edu.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. President Trump has proposed a $1 trillion infrastructure plan.
The time has come for a new program of national rebuilding.
So what should the money be spent on? We'll talk with former Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood. That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 1 on 91.3. And ahead on today's Ozarks, a sweeping proposed constitutional amendment to be discussed by the Arkansas Bar Association could set up a possible heavyweight political battle in 2018.
It's big. I mean, this is a battle royal if it happens. If you've got the nursing home and the medical industries on one side and the law and the legal industry on the other, and if you're proposing to make five rather significant changes. I mean, it sounds simple. Rather than override a governor's veto by a simple majority, it takes 2/3. That changes the whole dynamic of a governor's power and governor and legislature relations.
John Brummett from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette discusses state and national politics with Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics ahead on today's Ozarks at Large. .3 is supported by Dog Party USA, providing supervised boarding and daycare for dogs of all sizes in an off-leash environment. New obedience and agility classes are forming now. Information available at 306-4660 or dogpartyusa.com. And support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring young professionals, the Fast 15, and networking events in the latest edition, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. subscriptions and information available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com. You can find out about stories we've aired on Ozarks at Large or are working on for future broadcasts, as well as other information, by following us on Twitter, our handle at Ozarks at Large. Or you can go to the Ozarks at Large Facebook page. You can also find past shows and individual stories at ozarksatlarge.com or KUAF.com. And yes, we have podcasts of this show, so you can listen on your schedule. You can subscribe for free through services like Stitcher or iTunes. And you can also find the most recent editions of the show through the free KUAF app. It's available for many smartphones and tablets. Just download the app, then look for the Ozarks at Large tab.
The center of a story, it's not so easy to find when things are moving quickly.
President Trump will sign an executive order tomorrow.
In a car, shot.
This weapon was aimed at a network.
There will not be a government shutdown because everyone...
Every day, rely on NPR to find the people and ideas at the center of the story so you understand what's happening and what it means to you. Stand with the facts. Listen every day.
This is Ozarks at Large. A battle over what could take place in Arkansas's courts in the future could be, emphasis right now on could be developing. The Arkansas Bar Association will discuss wording that could turn into a possible proposed constitutional amendment affecting many aspects of Arkansas's legal operations. There are many hurdles to clear before the concept is actually on the ballot in November 2018, but John Brummett from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette is intrigued by the possibility. This week, Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics talked with Brummett about national politics and the possible state constitutional amendment. John Brummett says a system is in place to allow members of the bar to examine proposals ahead of the bar's annual convention.
Next month, the bar convention will meet in Hot Springs. The House of Delegates will assemble at that time. And the rules require that 30 days before the House of Delegates meets to consider anything, a proposal has to have been given notice of 30 days. So mailings went out today from Denise Huggard, the president of the bar, two members of the House of Delegates outlining this idea for major sort of omnibus constitutional reform as an answer to the tort reform proposal. It's a compilation of changes in the state constitution that would include forbidding damage caps and leaving rulemaking on the judicial branch with the Supreme Court, but it would also do other things like require disclosure of dark money in state races and cap dark money in judicial races, a governor's veto, which can now be overridden by a simple majority, which renders it pointless, could only be overridden by two-thirds. GIF money, local project money, there would be an amendment to the Constitution that would expressly forbid directing an appropriation locally or through an agency, which would put that out of business. It would restore administrative rulemaking with state agencies and let the legislature review rather than approve, which took place a few years ago, and one other that I can't remember.
But no, I think you hit them all right there.
That there are five proposals, and what it's doing is it is a single proposed amendment, which would have one single comprehensive ballot title, but it would amend the Constitution in five different places to do those things. So it would take on the business community and the nursing home and the medical community's tort reform proposal head on, but then it would have a lot of other things.
Do some of the good government things that you've seen a lot of progressive groups and causes out there promoting the last couple of years. So how confusing is all of that going to be for a voter to read that ballot title and understand what's going to be on? That would be the obvious legal challenge, would it not?
Well, it's going to be confusing on its face in that we have a tort reform proposal and we have another proposal that bans that kind of tort reform, but also does many other things. I've never seen an amendment in this form, and it remains to be seen. I mean, having never encountered anything quite like this that makes four or five separate amendments or changes in the Constitution, I don't know how people will respond to it, but it depends on, the debate will be interesting. If the Bar Association chooses next month to propose this comprehensive five-plank amendment, will the debate, and then they get it on the ballot in 2018, will our dialogue and debate in the fall of 2018 be simply about tort reform? They want it. the lawyers are against it in that fight, or will the Bar Association be able to reframe the debate to have us talking about good government, like banning the local projects and disclosing contributors otherwise unknown to us in our races? So I've never seen a proposal quite like this. I've never seen a dynamic quite like this, but it's innovative and it's big. I mean, this is a battle royal if it happens. If you've got the nursing home and the medical industries on one side and the law and the legal industry on the other, and if you're proposing to make five rather significant changes. I mean, it sounds simple. Rather than override a governor's veto by a simple majority, it takes 2/3. That changes the whole dynamic of a governor's power and governor and legislature relations. So we'll just have to see if they have the nerve to put it on the ballot and get it there, and it'll be a fascinating
study. There's some hoops that have to jump through. Number one, the Bar Association's delegates have to approve that they want to push forward on this, number one. And number two, then you got to go collect signatures, which is no small undertaking and not necessarily a guarantee
of money and manpower.
Of success. And then you got to survive the legal challenges to possibly get it
thrown
off.
The House delegates would have to say, we want the Bar Association to do this. Then you would have to get Attorney General Rutledge to approve a ballot title that she would consider, and they want to keep it short and understandable, but which would cover all, which is a trick, cover all five proposals. Then that done, you begin the real work of signatures, and then you begin a campaign. So we're far from having the battle royal, but it's interesting that the Bar Association has the idea percolating, and it's going to be on the agenda next month in Hot Springs at their convention.
We had a lot happening last week on the national stage. Sally Yates, the acting attorney general, testified before a congressional committee. That in and of itself would have been enough to dominate a week's worth of news, but not in the Trump era, because by midweek you have the James Comey firing. We saw Sean Spicer hiding in the bushes, Sarah Huckabee Sanders standing behind the lectern there.
Getting portrayed on Saturday Night Live.
Trump talking about canceling press briefings by the end of the week. This has been one of the more bizarre weeks in the Trump campaign. Would you not agree?
Well, that's a high bar, a bizarre week in the Trump era. But this sudden firing of Comey, and apparently an afternoon's fit of pique by the president because he was tired of seeing Sally Yates on TV and started looking bad in his favorite pastime, which is watching all the cable channels. And so he gets this letter and he writes it, and he claims it's based on an attorney general's recommendation, an assertion he took back or contradicted the next day, has his bodyguard send it over to the FBI while Comey is not there. He's in Los Angeles at a meeting in a conference room with some FBI people, and a runner on the TV screen behind him announces that the president has fired him.
He thought it was a joke. He
did.
Thought it was a prank they were playing on him.
And it was there was a great moment in Saturday Night Live when the actor portraying Lester Holt during the interview with Trump is sitting there and asks Trump a question, and Trump says, "Yeah, I was going to fire him anyway because of this Russian deal." And Lester speaks into his IFB, is looking to somebody, the director, "So have I got him? Have I got him?" And he hears back, "Not anymore. Nothing matters anymore." And I think that with Trump, there's things that would weeks ago, months ago, have destroyed any politician in sight. Now we don't know if it does. It's just, the rules are so different with his behavior and his eccentricity that we can't. Is this a new level of misbehavior and outrage that moves the debate, hard to say, because we just don't know, and you can't really get to the bottom of it. I mean, was he obstructing justice by firing the guy in charge of the? Not if the new guy continues the investigation. And is firing Comey a bad thing? Democrats say, yeah, because of the timing. But by the way, we wanted him fired last year So it's unlike anything I've seen.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. His columns can also be read at arkansasonline.com. He talked with Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics, and you can see more from that conversation at talkbusiness.net. You can also find out much more about state issues around the clock there and find a daily podcast about Arkansas business and politics at talkbusiness.net. This is Ozarks at Large.
Susan Burton had the best of intentions when she was released from prison.
I wanted to be brave,
and I wanted to be strong, and I wanted to be successful.
On the next Fresh Air, Burton talks with us about the obstacles that kept her from starting a new life after prison, and how she eventually started a program that houses newly released women in the Watts neighborhood of L.A. Join us.
Fresh Air at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. every weekday on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studios are Milton Grammarian, Catherine Schultz. Welcome back.
Thanks, Kyle. You know, it's close to Memorial Day.
Yes.
A day we remember the people who died serving our country. Mm-hmm. Some might think that it's odd to celebrate death, but in Mexico, El Día de los Muertos honors the dead with a much more lively festival than our Memorial Day.
It does. And it's, you know, about remembering people who are here and what you loved about them.
Right, exactly. Thinking about death led me to another Mental Floss entry, and one, you know, one of my favorite websites.
It used to be a physical magazine, now it's a website.
A map of words called The Most Characteristic Words for Dying in 2015 Obituaries by State.
Oh, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah. Now, the map maker used a similar methodology to the most distinctive causes of death.
Mm-hmm.
He calculated the difference between regional and national prevalence of each term, and then the highest value gave the phrase that's the most characteristic to that state. So this is not the most used.
Gotcha.
The most distinctive word for dying in Arkansas is went to be with his or her or the Lord.
Mm, you see that in obits, yes.
And that distinction is shared by Illinois.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, Kyle, what do you think the most commonly used words in obituaries were for death?
Passed away?
Mm-hmm. That was used in 32.5% of all obituaries and topped the national list. In every single state, it was either passed away or died that was used most often. You know, I always use died. I don't use
them. I think most newsrooms do.
Yeah.
I mean, because
that's
it's
probably where, yeah.
It's just the word to use because you start, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it reminded me of one of my favorite worst headlines.
Mm-hmm.
Former football star passes. Which,
right.
You know, on top of an obituary is really not, you don't really want people chuckling. Right.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
That's right. That's
yeah.
Right. So I wanted to examine some of the more unusual euphemisms for dead, death, or dying, and I found a list at verywell.com.
And I think probably a lot of us use euphemisms because it's kind of an uncomfortable subject sometimes
sure.
to talk about. Yeah.
Sure, yeah. None of these would or should be used in an obituary, but we use some of them in everyday speech. Some I can't believe anyone uses.
Okay.
I've heard kick the bucket.
Yes.
But here's one I hadn't heard, kicked the oxygen habit.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yes.
So that means,
well, you're not breathing anymore.
That's right.
Right.
You're not using oxygen
right.
anymore. Imagine, like, Hotel California, a place where you can never leave. Here are a couple of lodging terms.
Mm-hmm.
Checked into the horizontal Hilton.
I've heard that.
You
That's,
have?
Yeah.
Never heard it.
No.
Checked into the Motel Deep Six.
I haven't heard that, but
now why Deep Six?
Well, because 6 feet under, right? Mm-hmm. The tradition is that you're buried 6 feet underground.
Right. I guess the next one might even be used in an obituary in an obituary written by a creative relative. He climbed the stairway to heaven.
You know, I've often wondered, Stairway to Heaven, I guess, existed as a phrase before Led Zeppelin.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a meme I saw recently online. It said, the fact that there's a highway to hell and only a stairway to heaven says a lot about anticipated traffic figures.
Yeah. Well, you know, and sometimes people, when they're talking about a pet that dies,
mm-hmm.
they'll talk about crossing the rainbow bridge.
Never heard that.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Well, lots of euphemisms refer to the practice of burying the dead, calling the death a dirt nap.
Yes.
Saying the deceased was feeding the worms
mm-hmm.
or that he was pushing up daisies.
All of those, I bet, have at least, if not an origin in noir and
mm-hmm.
pulp fiction.
Mm-hmm.
They were popularized through those, you know.
Right.
Because can't you hear Sam Spade or
sure.
someone he dealt
yeah.
with?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Dick Tracy or someone like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Took a dirt nap. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, The Big Sleep. Which
yeah,
is a Bogart movie.
That's another
yeah.
one, sure, yeah. Sometimes people are buried at sea,
mm-hmm.
but the term sleeps with the fishes creates a more specific image.
Well, I associate that with the mob,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
Well, Luke O'Bronson sleeps with the fishes when they sent the fish.
Exactly.
Yes.
But for drowned sailors and shipwrecks, when the remains are consigned to the bottom of the sea, they're sent to Davy Jones' locker.
Which, when I was a kid, was so confusing because I was aware of the monkeys. And it's like, why is the shortest member of this singing group associated with death? It took me years to separate those.
Finally, I have a few that would be considered more modern.
Mm-hmm.
A deceased friend could be fragged. It's a disturbing term meaning to deliberately kill a fellow soldier, but the term has become popular with video gamers.
Oh.
Young men, usually, who spend time virtually killing people on digital battlefields.
So
they say that he was fragged.
So one of your teammates on a different headset took you out of the game on purpose or something?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
all
I
right.
suppose.
All right.
Not my scene.
Yeah.
Then there's the somewhat modern use and overuse of the word challenged.
Challenged.
Paired with a hyphenated adjective resulting in immortality challenged.
I've not heard this.
Neither.
Okay.
And the one that might just catch on locally, not going to shop at Walmart anymore.
That's actually one that someone has used? All right. I got it. All right. Well, that's the end of this. Catherine Sherrills is our militant grammarian. This is Ozarks at Large. The four members of the Dover Quartet have been spending part of their spring in Northwest Arkansas for one-fourth of their lives. This year, they're here for Artisphere, marking the seventh consecutive year they've created music as part of the annual event. They've already played a couple of concerts as the quartet, and they're also part of the large Artisphere Orchestra, assembled from musicians from around the country and from around the world. Last week, all four members of the quartet, Brian Lee, Joel Link, Kevin Shaw, and Milana Pakravandistat came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk about several things, including a new project they are involved with regarding the music associated with the legendary television series Twin Peaks.
Well, we've got a good friend of ours. Actually, we met him at another festival out in Portland, Oregon, and he particularly is a huge fan of Twin Peaks. He got us all watching it. And he wrote his dissertation on the music of Twin Peaks. And when we became friends, he said to us, what do you think about a Fantasia for string quartet based on that music? And we all thought that would be super cool. Mm-hmm. And now there's going to be a reboot of Twin Peaks years and years and years later. So what better timing than to have this Fantasia coincide with the reboot of the series, which is also going to be directed by David Lynch entirely.
And so this will be, what's it been, 25, 20?
I think it was 90. Yeah. So it's been like 26, 27 years.
Hmm. And the premiere will be later this month.
Yep.
Season
21st,
three.
I believe. And our event where we do a sneak peek of the piece he's writing us is on the 30th.
A sneak peek, I like
a
that.
A sneak peek, yeah, because the official,
yeah.
Well, it's not going to be the entire piece, it'll just be a bit of it. And the official debut, the official premiere will be in Portland this summer.
When you go to a different venue to perform, say it's St. Paul's, which is a church sanctuary, or you go to a museum, or you are in a performance hall that is intended strictly for performance, how long does it take to figure out? Or does it take any time at all to figure out how this new room might play with your music?
Well, that's a very interesting question because we've been performing in so many different venues that It's kind of like, I feel like you can relate it to maybe like a pianist who every time they perform, they play on a different instrument. For us, the different rooms are almost like playing on different instruments. And I think that the adjustment happens almost subconsciously now because we're so used to having to adapt to different sounding spaces. But at first, I mean, when we were maybe, you know, 5 years ago when we were playing much fewer concerts, it took a little bit more adjusting, and we would be struck by very resonant spaces and having to play things a little slower and that kind of thing. Now we almost don't even think about it because you're adapting to it as though you're just playing on another instrument.
Yeah, definitely. I also think different performers have different philosophies about how much you should change the way you play depending on where you are. And some people will really change, for instance, the lengths of notes, particularly short notes. If it's really resonant, they'll play them much, much shorter if it's a, you know, boomy space. But I don't think we tend to do that quite as much as some. The idea being that you can never completely correct for is maybe not quite the right way to say it. But you know what I mean, to correct for a space that's very, very ringy, right? And so in attempting to do so by really changing the way you play, it's actually just more likely that you're not communicating what you, as an artist, really want to communicate. So in any space, the audience also is listening past whatever little problems the space may have, and they're really just paying attention to what you're delivering emotionally. So yeah, we'll definitely adjust, and it's very quickly and I think pretty subconscious, but we don't change as much as some people do. And actually, we had a joke about that at one concert where we were playing with a colleague, and he'd played in the space before and we hadn't, and he said, oh, well, it's not like we're going to get there and be like, oh my God, we have to play everything so much shorter. So, and we thought that was hilarious because we never do that.
Now, am I correct? There is a movie in your future?
Yeah. We've been,
it's a long project,
deep in this project now for about 6 months. We're in the process of filming a documentary, although we're not literally filming it because none of us are holding the camera. But yeah, we have a great director and cameraman who have been following us around all over the world, in Austria, Canada, a bunch of cities in the U.S., and trying to get a closer look at what it is we do and why we're passionate about it and why it's relevant to all of humanity.
Yeah, I think it's to just kind of dispel theories about, you know, classical music not being for everybody. And of course, you know, we're in a very particular area of classical music, but, you know, it's a very individual, exciting art form and one that we're very passionate about and always really excited about and work really hard and are sometimes frustrated. Sometimes we argue, sometimes we're in a great mood. So, you know, trying to capture all of that on camera and making us seem like, you know, relatable people to the world.
Don't you think ArtSphere helps with that?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Tremendously.
In fact, we're timing the launch of our Kickstarter campaign with ArtSphere because we feel so comfortable here, and also that it's a really supportive community that knows us well and has known us now for years. And so we actually, when we were looking for a time to open that, we decided, oh, let's do it when we're here on home turf.
It's also nice not to be, you know, managing everything from the road and to actually be somewhere where you can kind of, you know, be at a
manage
comfortable
things.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, and actually the crew they're coming down here to do some filming as well. So it'll definitely have a big part in the documentary. And something that I'm especially excited about is the pub crawl that the musicians do every year, which is such a staple of our time here, mm-hmm. and so indicative of why we love performing here, because everyone in the town is involved. Everyone's excited about the music, no matter what the music is. They're going to be filming a little bit of that, too, watching us go from bar to bar, end up at Smoke and Barrel, and maybe playing a little Mozart while people drink beer.
Maybe drinking beer while we play Mozart.
Yeah, probably both.
Speaking of schedule, you're on the road a lot. I mean, but you know this. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But over the course of the next several months, you're going to be in Europe. And then I noticed in July, whoever does the scheduling has you out of the hot weather. Minnesota, Portland, Oregon, Woodstock. Mm-hmm. But in August, they put you in Mexico, Santa Fe, and Texas. It's going to be hot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's always interesting packing for trips like that because, you know, I think between those trips we'll have a chance to go home. But I remember there was a tour, you know, sometime in the fall that it was like we were in Florida and then we were in like Toronto. And it's like, man, you know, at certain times of year, that's just those are brutal changes. But I guess we don't really think about that too much. It's just wherever, you know, people are excited to have us play and where the booking works out and the schedule works out, we're
It does contribute to the fact that, or I guess maybe it's part of the reason that I usually forget what month we're in.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know what season it is.
Day of the week.
Milana Pakrovandistat, Brian Lee, Joel Link, and Kevin Shaw are the four members of the Dover Quartet. They're in Northwest Arkansas this May, the seventh consecutive May they've done that, as part of Artisphere, the Festival of Arts and Nature presented by Walton Arts Center. A performance from the Dover Quartet that took place this past Saturday at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville was recorded for KUAF, and that will be broadcast tonight on Of Note with Katie Hendrickson, beginning at 8 this evening on 91.3.
When news breaks quickly, it can be hard to know what really matters.
President Trump will sign an executive order tomorrow.
In a car, shot.
This weapon was aimed at a network.
There will not be a government shutdown because everyone...
Every morning, rely on NPR News to find the people and ideas at the center of the story so that you understand what's happening and what it means to you. Stand with the facts. Listen to Morning Edition every day.
Morning Edition tomorrow morning and every weekday morning from 5 to 9 on 91.3 KUAF. Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large... Travel agents. Remember them? While there certainly aren't as many people making their living that way as there used to be, our explainer tracked down some interesting information about the 70,000 people still working as travel agents.
The demographic use that has the highest usage rate for travel agencies, and that was millennials. In the year 2015, 34% of them, millennials, reported using a travel agent, more than any other demographic age group.
Our Ozarks at Large explainer, Dave Edmark, returns with some surprising facts about getting from here to there, with help, on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3. The 17th Annual Art of Wine Festival presents Uncorked Wine Tasting June 9th at 7 p.m. This summer social party offers over 500 wines, plus cheeses, beer, desserts, and bubbles. A limited number of tickets available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600. 91.3 FM KUAF is supported by Highlands Oncology Group. Highlands Oncology's cancer specialists provide comprehensive, collaborative care, allowing patients and families to stay close to home. With locations in Benton and Washington counties, Highlands Oncology is helping patients fight the battle every day. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. As damage to Arkansas's agricultural sector is still being assessed, a looming crop insurance deadline is worrying rice farmers in the state. State officials have petitioned the U.S. Department of Agriculture to help adjust rules requiring crops be replanted by June 9th to be eligible for crop loss insurance. Jared Hardke, a Rice Extension agronomist with the University of Arkansas's Division of Agriculture, says that deadline makes sense for some crops, but the time to reap dividends from rice cultivation is narrowing.
That final end of the late planting period of June 9th is really very late, where we're typically looking at a 30% decline below optimum yield potential compared to our preferred planting window really in early to mid-April.
Hardke says he could see the situation in Arkansas serving as a catalyst for the June 9th deadline shifting to better accommodate rice growers' pocketbooks. But he cautions that might not happen until next season or some date in the future. Flooding earlier this month has had a big impact on vast swaths of northeast Arkansas, prompting a tour from U.S. agricultural head Sonny Perdue. Arkansas is the producer of more rice than any other state, growing over half of the nation's rice output. Information from the United States Department of Commerce indicates Arkansas's economy barely expanded in the last quarter of 2016, growing by one-half of 1%. For the entire year, the state's GDP growth was about 1.7%, below the national average of 3.9%. University of Arkansas Little Rock economist Michael Packow writes the reasons for the tepid growth in 2016 include low energy prices that have depressed mining activity and manufacturing growth for durable goods in Arkansas being negative. Arts, entertainment, and recreation showed the biggest gains. Packow writes about the economy in his Arkansas Economist report. Talk Business and Politics reports a Benton County-based poultry company is selling to an Iowa-based firm. Crystal Lakes Farm, located in Decatur, is being acquired by West Liberty Foods. Crystal Lake will keep its name and operate as a division of the new parent company. Crystal Lake began operation in 2013. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals will attempt to give manager Vance Wilson his 401st career minor league win tonight after delivering a milestone victory for their skipper last night in North Little Rock. The Nats defeated the Arkansas Travelers last night 6-2. And the Arkansas Razorback men's golf team is staying close to the field that will advance out of this week's NCAA regionals in Baton Rouge. Arkansas ended yesterday's first round in Louisiana, tied for eighth place and just seven shots behind the fifth place team. It's the top five finishers this week in Baton Rouge that will advance to next month's NCAA championships in Illinois.
This week on Invisibilia, Lulu Miller travels to a town in Belgium called Hale.
At the village of Hale in Belgium, it was well known that the insane have been placed under the management of the villagers.
A place where, for centuries, everyday people have welcomed strangers with mental illness into their homes.
Like a beloved aunt or uncle.
That's on the next episode of Invisibilia from NPR.
That's coming up Sunday at 3 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF.
Nerdy's summer sessions begin in June with a variety of week-long tech and art courses for children 6 to 15. Classes in coding for animation, mods for Minecraft, video game development, be a YouTube star, and more will be offered. Nerdy's.me to learn more, sponsor a child, or to register. A service of the Walter J. Lemke Department of Journalism and the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Gateway. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellum. Stepping away for a bit of a vacation for the next week and a half or so, Antoinette Grajeda and Timothy Dennis will be here hosting and producing the show. I look forward to a break, but also coming back after Memorial Day. We'll end today's show with music from the Vine Brothers, recorded inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. This is their song, The Well. Friday night, you can see them live with Melody Pond Band at Stage 18 in downtown Fayetteville. That's Friday night at 8. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.
You got the notion. That's the thing now. Do me right. Do me right. Upon your tongue.
They say the fountain will keep you young. There's more at the well, as far as I can tell. As far as I can tell.